Thanks very much, Richard. Thanks everyone for having me. As Richard said, my name is James. I've come here a few times before, but not over the last 18 months or so. So I may not have met all of you. But it's very nice to be here. I want to start just by introducing us to the letter of 1 Peter, the letter that we'll be learning from over the next couple of weeks. So it's written by, unsurprisingly, Peter, one of Jesus' closest disciples, maybe a couple of decades after Jesus' time on earth. And he's writing to Christians who are spread out over what is roughly modern-day Turkey. And judging from what Peter says over the course of the letter, those Christians seem to have been going through quite a difficult time because of their faith. And if we were going to grade Christian suffering on a scale where 1 is maybe being gently teased now and then and 10 is being burned at the stake, I would probably put this sort of environment that these Christians are in maybe around a 4 or 5. So it's significant persecution, but it's not extreme. And I just thought it'd be useful for me to show you a couple of verses that make me think that. And I've put down some of those on the handout. So the first one in chapter 2, Peter says, I'll read a bit more of it. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable. Gentiles, he just means non-Christians. So that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. So we've got Christians trying to live good Christian lives, and non-believers looking at those lifestyles and saying, you know what, the way those Christians live, the things they believe, that's just wrong. And we don't like it. And we don't like them. Or similarly, in chapter 4, Peter says, the time that is past suffices for doing what the Gentiles want to do, living in sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, and lawless idolatry. With respect to this, they are surprised when you do not join them in the same flood of debauchery, and they malign you. He's saying the Christians are refusing to indulge in immoral behavior, and that surprises everybody else around them. Hey, why can't you just live a little? Have another drink, come on, is that sort of thing. And they malign them, that is verbal abuse. You're such a holier than thou, such a killjoy, no fun at all. Now, when you build up that picture, pretty quickly you realize it's not that different to London today. Because we're definitely not in danger of being burned at the stake at this point. But we do get that sort of maligning because of our faith and because of our different lifestyle. So, I mean, it's not unusual for a Christian to be slightly looked down on in the office, or just left out of the group, maybe called names like homophobe, or for Christian viewpoints to be presented as outlying or dated or wrong or evil. Now, from the way Peter writes, it seems like these guys he was writing to were tempted to just fit in a bit more, to dial back their Christian lifestyle. And you can understand why, because it would make things a lot easier for them. And aren't we tempted to do the same thing? I certainly am. And you know what? I think a lot of the time, it's not just that we're tempted. We do dial back our Christian lifestyle. So perhaps this sort of thinking is familiar to you. The colleagues are getting a bit worse for wear tonight. Okay, well, I'll stay sober as the Christian, obviously. But perhaps I'll just drink this really slowly so it seems like I'm keeping up with the rest of them. Or my friends are telling jokes that really are quite a long way over the line. Well, I won't tell one myself, obviously. But I'll laugh along anyway so that they don't think I'm judging them. And Peter is saying to us, keep on living differently. Keep on living differently. But here's our question. Why should we? I mean, really, what difference would it make if I just fitted in a bit more? And you could be asking this as a Christian this lunchtime. Why should I go to all this effort? Or as somebody who's not yet a Christian, thinking, why is it that Christians are supposed to behave differently? So why should Christians live any differently? That question is going to take us both this week and next week to address. And this week, we begin with a simple description of who or what a Christian actually is. So why should Christians live any differently? Well, what is a Christian anyway? And that takes us on to our passage that Richard read out. And there is a lot packed into it, but I think it is essentially just that, a description of what a Christian is. You get the summary right up front in verse 1. So if you have a look at that, Peter calls these Christians elect exiles on the second line there. What does that mean? Well, elect means chosen by God. The idea is Christians are immeasurably privileged, God's special people. And exiles, well, that means just that. Christians are not at home. You could use the word strangers or refugees. So a Christian is an elect exile, someone who's immeasurably privileged, but also fundamentally not at home. There's the summary. But why? What is it that makes a Christian so special and yet so out of place? Well, if we keep moving, have a look at verse 3. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. According to his great mercy, he has caused us to be born again. Okay, we pause there again. Christians have been born again. So this isn't just some Christians. It's not a particular brand of Christian. It's all Christians. And to be born again, it means exactly that. It means you've started a new life. Birth is the beginning of new life, right? So if you're born again, you are not the old you anymore. So if you think of New Year's resolutions or self-help books, good things, they can genuinely make some difference in people's lives. But all those kind of changes are skin deep compared to being born again. Let me introduce you to the new me. Well, only the new Christian can say that with real authenticity. And for clarity, this means if you do become a Christian, if you're born again, you do not stay the same person you were before. It's not just adding in an extra hobby on Sundays. So don't think art class, think labor ward. Completely new person. Okay, so a Christian isn't who they once were. Who are they instead? Well, if we take it from verse 3 again. He has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled, and unfading. So when you're born again, it's not just that you wave goodbye to your old life. You also start another one. And get this, your new life has a destination of immortality. Now, that's not just speculation or wishful thinking. Peter's basing that idea on the fact that Jesus Christ rose from the dead. You can see that at the end of verse 3. He mentions Jesus' resurrection, and it's a historical event that Peter himself was a witness to. If you're skeptical, you can ask more about that afterwards if you'd like. But anyway, in verse 4, Peter says, because of that, because Jesus has been resurrected to immortality, his followers can look forward to the same thing happening to them. Isn't that fantastic? Peter talks about it as an inheritance, that's the word he uses, as in a future reality, a future gift. And it's imperishable, undefiled, and unfading. I really like those descriptions. He's saying the future experience, it will never disappear or be revoked or lost or spoiled at all. Can I play you a conversation that I've had with a few different people recently? So it goes, I say to the person, isn't this idea of immortality really exciting? And the other person says to me, well, wouldn't it just become dreary or boring? You know, repetitive. Won't the lack of jeopardy make it sort of flat? And perhaps that's your position too. I don't know. But if it is, look again at verse 4. An inheritance that is unfading. I particularly like that one. The things that will make this future immortality fun, interesting, exciting, the things worth living for, won't fade. They won't get boring. They won't lose their zing. In fact, if anything, they'll get better and better, I think. So, Christians are born again into a life that is destined for this everlasting future reality. It hasn't yet begun. Verse 5 says it's ready to be revealed in the last time. But it is coming. So perhaps if we begin to draw some of these ideas together, remember that question from the start? Why should Christians behave any differently? Well, this is the beginning of the answer. Because Christians are different. So on the one hand, Christians are elect, they're chosen, immeasurably privileged. This future inheritance, immortality, has been given to you. I mean, can you think of any greater privilege? And on the other hand, Christians are exiles, fundamentally not at home. And that makes sense. If you have immortality in the bag, then this short life, full of imperfection and frustration and suffering, is just not going to be your focus anymore, is it? Or at least it shouldn't be, if you're thinking straight. Christian people are not like other people. They should find that their focus has shifted from this life to the next, from the perishable to the imperishable, from the defiled to the undefiled, and from the fading to the unfading. Or put it this way, a Christian is a person who recognizes that they are an alien on this planet, a stranger to this life, someone who knows they will never look or even feel as though they're at home on earth, because they belong in that future. And Peter would add just one thing to this picture. Because you might think something like, perhaps Christians could end up all being a bit grumpy or impatient, having to endure this life now, grit your teeth and bear it, or a bit like the child in the car. Are we nearly there yet? But look at how Peter describes the Christian's outlook. Verse 6. In this, you rejoice. Christians are joyful people. Even when life is hard, even when they're grieved by various trials, he says. In fact, if anything, Peter says those trials actually refine the Christian's faith in verse 7. And the joy comes up again in verse 8. He says, Christians rejoice with a joy that is inexpressible. I really love that. It's a joy, it's a satisfaction and excitement that is so deep you can't even put it into words. So what are Christians like? Well, this is what they're not like. People who moan and grumble about their lives, who complain about losing their freedoms now so that they have to live Jesus's way. People who wish they didn't have those extra rules. No, actually, Christians are the most joyful people you could ever meet. Or I should say we should be, if we remember who we are. So, a Christian should behave differently. Why? Well, we've got at least part of the answer now. Because Christians are different. And people who are different behave differently, don't they? There is still more to Peter's answer. I mean, we haven't covered what it is about Christians that means they should be different in these particular ways. You know, this particular morality, those particular ways of thinking and behaving. And we'll get to that side of the answer next week, so come back. But why don't we finish by thinking for just a couple of minutes about the answer that we've already seen today. Christians should be different because they are different. They are elect exiles. So I'll start with a question for any friends here who aren't yet a Christian. Did you have your definition of a Christian right? So a Christian is not someone who is basically the same but goes to church on Sundays. It's much more than that. A Christian is not someone who's like the rest of the world, just following a different set of moral rules. It's more than that as well. It's not even enough to say that a Christian is someone who has faith in Jesus. So that's true, of course. But again, it's more than that. Here's the definition that we have from Peter. A Christian is one of God's chosen people with immortality as their future. And until they inherit that immortality, they are not at home. Joyful, but not at home. So, to anybody not yet a Christian today, in one sense, you might be surprised to hear me say this, I sort of hope you're a little bit put off by this definition. As in, clearly, if you chose to become a Christian, it would involve massive changes for you. And I wouldn't want you to go into that lightly. But much more than that, I hope you're finding this definition compelling. Following Jesus has a lot more to offer than you might have thought. We're not talking about a superficial change. This is a comprehensive rewiring of your whole self by God. A future of immortality. And for those of us who are Christians, similar question, is this the way that you think of yourself? Now, I can guess what you're thinking. Most of you are thinking it, so I'll say it for us. No. No, we often don't think of ourselves this way. Christians, we often get this a bit wrong, or very wrong, and I'm definitely included in this. You know about eternal life to come, sure, but so often it's this life that becomes the main event. You know the reasons why you should feel that joy that is inexpressible. Knowing Jesus, forgiveness, and immortality. But you just allow those reasons to be pushed aside by the everyday pressures and joys that we come across. And far from living as strangers on planet Earth, we spend our energy actually trying to show the world that we're just the same as them. Sometimes I hear this sort of thing. Oh, I introduced my colleague to my mates from church and it was really good. I think she came away thinking that Christians are basically just normal people. Have you ever heard that? And I get so frustrated when I hear that because, well, I can understand it to some extent. We don't want to just be weird for the sake of being weird. But we are not normal as Christians. We're exiles on this earth. Don't give in to that desire to fit in. It's not who we are. It's being inconsistent with who God has made us into. Now, this is pretty challenging for us Christians, I think. And if you are feeling the challenge on any level, it's good because Peter has showed us the solution, even within this passage. It's simple. Remind yourself of who you are. You've been born again into a living hope. Peter would say, could you rediscover what that means to you? You're destined for a future that will never end, where joy and satisfaction and relationship and all good things are unfading. Peter would say, could you think about that a little bit more? And you do, even now, have this joy that is too deep for words. I imagine you definitely first had that when you became a Christian. And it probably resurfaces now and then, doesn't it? But maybe tomorrow morning you could take verses 3-5 from this passage and just think them through properly. What do they mean to you? I think a habit like that is really the secret to this joy that he's talking about, even in the face of being grieved by various trials, even when we want to grumble or when we want to dial back our Christian lifestyle. Christians should live differently because they are different. They're immortal and strangers in this life. Next week, how that translates into action.